The topic of today's talk is investing. And this talk is not specifically about money. In fact, it's hardly about money at all. Because the topic of investing is much broader and more important than just in the area of money. You and I have all heard this statement from teachers who are about to start their classes. You will get out of it what you put into it. Isn't that statement directly related to investing? Isn't that teacher really telling us that our investment into the class will determine our return on that investment and what we get out of that class? Any good student will tell you that makes perfect sense to them. If you've listened to any of my other Sunday talks, you may have noticed that I'm an admirer of a man named Walter Russell. Walter Russell is now deceased, but when he was alive, he was considered a modern-day Leonardo da Vinci. To find out more about him, you can download for free a book about him from this website, philosophy.org. And the title of the book on the site you will find is The Man Who Tapped the Secrets of the Universe, and it was written by a man named Glenn Clark. There are a lot of important lessons that a person can learn from Walter Russell in this story of his life. And one of the ideas that I'm going to talk about today is his emphasis on the need for a balanced exchange of energy. Walter Russell understood that it was a required spiritual law that said an equal energy exchange in order to maintain harmony or maintain health or to be successful or to reap a reward was absolutely essential. And that law couldn't be violated. And so he was a big proponent of making sure that you invested enough energy into whatever it is you were trying to produce a result in. All of us know this idea. We reap what we sow. And if Walter Russell talked in terms of a farmer and the reality of a balanced exchange, he tied the magnitude of the harvest, the crop that was going to be harvested or reaped at the end of the season, to the investment that the farmer made, not only in terms of the seed or the equipment, but also in terms of the time, skill, and energy in the preparation, planting, fertilizing, watering, weeding, and other processes to ensure the environment was good for those plants. So investing energy into creating the ideal environment for those plants ensured that in order to balance it, the ground, the earth, the universe was going to produce a bumper crop. He felt that for a farmer to expect a great harvest when he didn't invest great energy would be not only a violation of spiritual law, but really a violation of common sense. As I'm journaling, I noticed that my wife just happily informed me, my wife Marianne, that she had located via the internet the top U.S. company in the creation of iPad and iPhone apps. It's a project that I have, but she decided to see if she could find a source. To me, this is an example of a characteristic of Marianne's that I found amazing over and over again over the last 12-plus years. Marianne has energy to invest. Literally, I believe this to be one of her secrets to her success in life, in business, in friendships, in the kitchen, and elsewhere. She always has energy to invest. And she doesn't, unlike myself and other people, translate circumstances into, oh, that requires more energy than I have. She never does that. She never does that. When I just reviewed a few of the experiences that I'm aware of in her background, it becomes very clear to me. Marianne has driven friends from Connecticut to Florida when they couldn't do it by themselves. She literally drove as hard and as long as she could, one night stop for only a few hours, and then when they arrived in Florida, she got back on a plane and flew back to work in Connecticut. she ordered, bought, and picked up a puppy from her breeder on Long Island and flew from New York to Texas to be on time for the birthday of a little girl who was the daughter of a friend and co-worker at IBM. She rented a truck, helped the widow pack, and drove that truck and the widow from Washington, D.C. back to Texas. The late husband had worked for Marianne at IBM. When she was first married in the early 1970s, she used to drive 8 hours each way on weekends from Ithaca, New York, which is way upstate, down to her family's restaurant on Long Island where we grew up, so she could wait tables over the weekend to make extra money and to see her parents, which was extremely important to them. If you had asked me 13 years ago, before I reconnected with my childhood sweetheart, who had the most stamina of anyone I knew and who could work the hardest, I would have put myself into the same category with my two brothers, John and George. But after I reconnected with Marianne, who, by the way, we knew one another since we were 5 years old and married on the playground field at 12, I realized very shortly after we reconnected that she had more stamina, more energy in her little finger than I had in my entire body. She was able to access energy that I couldn't find, I thought I didn't have. And so what does that mean? What does that mean to me? What does it mean to you? Well, you can use my personal experience, and this is what it meant. It meant that I believed in scarcity. I believed in lack. I believed in limitation. I believed in not enoughness. And I believed that my access to energy was confined or restricted. It meant that I had to view situations and weigh them out. Do I have enough energy for this? Was it too difficult? Was it worth it? Could I do it effectively? You know, was it too hard? And so on. There are lots of ways we protect ourselves when we have mislearned that we are limited. And those are lies that we learn about our limitations. And because we don't want to run out of gas, we don't want to put ourselves in uncomfortable positions where we feel bad about ourselves, we can't do the job, we don't measure up. That really says we believe the lies about ourselves, and we keep ourselves limited through those beliefs. I just made another connection. Last night we watched the movie Secretariat. It's about a horse that wins the Triple Crown in racing, which is an unbelievably amazing, rarely duplicated feat. And one of the pivotal points near the end of the movie was when the owner of the horse and the trainer of that horse were discussing two options. They were trying to determine whether Secretariat needed to rest after the last race or whether he needed to be trained hard continually right up to the next race. And one thing could help him and one thing could harm him, and they weren't sure what was the right approach for it. But conventional wisdom and the competitors with other horses thought that to rest the horse was the best approach. But they didn't rest Secretariat. And in fact, this is what they did. And this is how I see it now. By not resting the horse, the owner and the trainer told and taught Secretariat that he had plenty of energy to invest. Energy wasn't scarce. It was plentiful. He didn't need to be rested because he had access because of his superior training, his superior breeding, and because of his superior spirit to run this race. As it turned out, Secretariat had plenty of energy to invest in that final race of the Triple Crown. He won the race in the fastest time ever recorded at that racetrack for that event, and he had the greatest margin of victory over the other horses. I think it was 31 lengths ahead of the person in, or the horse and rider in position number two. That is amazing. That is amazing. And so I say, what a lesson. What a lesson. We have plenty of energy to invest. And it's a lesson that can be learned over and over and over again and still require more learning. Let's see if these ideas make any sense to us. The better student is the one who invests in studying. The better athlete is the one who invests in practice. The wealthier person is the one who invests more. The most successful bodybuilder is the one who invests more in working out. The better manager is the one who invests more in learning to manage. The person who loses weight when they want to is the one who invests energy in losing weight and that process. The more successful business owner is the one who invests more energy into the business. The person who is happier is the one who invests more energy into being happy. The person who loves their work is the one who invests more energy into loving their work. Makes sense to me. But because a person can invest the same amount of time and raw energy, there's another element. And that element, I would say, is effectiveness. And that has to be addressed too. Literally, practicing the wrong technique on a golf course, for instance, on a driving range, or in the kitchen, or anywhere else, practicing the wrong technique for 100 hours is not the same as practicing effectively for 100 hours. So what distinguishes ineffective investing from effective investing? I'm really not sure. This is a new concept to me, but I think this is it. Effective investing is for the purposes of creating a desired outcome, that is, for bonding with a desired result. Ineffective investing is for the purpose of avoiding an undesired outcome, that is, for rejecting a not wanted result. Noodling that by me, and perhaps by you, could be a good idea. There are two other areas I want to talk about. Number one is making the impossible possible, and two, where to go for energy so we have energy to invest. In the early 1970s, when I was in the United States Army Special Forces stationed in Panama, I repeatedly volunteered for and was finally accepted to attend an international guerrilla warfare school in Colombia, South America, run by the Colombian Army. It was an army post a couple of hundred miles down the mountain from Bogota. I wanted to go to the Escuela de Lanceros, which is really translates basically as a ranger school, in order to see what I was mentally, emotionally, and physically capable of. I wanted to challenge myself so I could know more about me. As we were driving down the mountain for that first day to be dropped off at the school, was going to begin in a few hours once we arrived, before we even got there, about 15 minutes away from that army post in Tolimaida, I became terrified and said to myself, what have I done? The reason for the terror? As we were driving over a bridge over the Magdalena River, and I was told as we were approaching the bridge that one of the required activities in Lancero School was to jump off that bridge into the river below. I thought to myself, oh my God, that's impossible. I was choking. My heart was in my throat. I was in the back seat, and the two people, a driver and the other American attendee, were in the front seat. I was trying to keep from I don't know what. It was difficult. And frankly, it didn't get any better. Because I was one of the two Americans, everything in the school was in Spanish. There was no English spoken unless I spoke to my fellow student. Interestingly enough for me, which helped me be discovered very readily and frankly be picked on, was I was the tallest person in the class, I was the biggest person in the class, I was the whitest person in the class, and I was an American. That gave them a great target to poke at, make fun of, and make life difficult for. And so when this group of 40 officers from Colombia, Argentina, Venezuela, Peru, and Mexico, I stood out. In every photo that I saw of that class, there's one giant white guy, and that was me. Sometimes I forget how long the course was, and I even forgot it during the course. I think it was 10 weeks long, but it seemed like it lasts forever. I actually had nightmares during the course, and this was the nightmare, that I was in hell, and this course was never going to end. That happened to me a couple of nights. I woke up frightened and sweating from those nightmares. That's the kind of course it was. Talk about terror. But this is the main point I wanted to make at that. Many days when we were told our schedules first thing in the morning when we were going to have breakfast, and basically I ate breakfast this way, used a fork with my right hand and used my left hand to keep the flies off of my food. So it's like, this is not hygienic. But every day when they referred to the schedule and told us what we were going to do that morning and that afternoon, I repeatedly thought, that's impossible. A few hours later, we had completed the impossible. In the afternoon, I'd say, that's impossible. And it went on for days like that. Sometimes I just said it to myself, just thought it, and other times I spoke it aloud. That's impossible. But day after day, the impossible turned into possible. Over time, I really realized one of the main conclusions that the instructors were teaching is this: nothing is impossible. All we needed was the will and the willingness to just open up to the possibility, and the energy necessary would be available to us. And that is a fantastic lesson to have gained. From the standpoint of a soldier, let's say a lancero, who is chasing a gorilla in the countryside over mountains and jungles, over rivers and really dry, deserty areas in Colombia. If a soldier could invest more energy, unlimited energy, more than their opponent, they would always be able to catch the other guy, who would need to sleep, rest, eat, make himself comfortable, and so on. If we could invest more, we could expect a greater return on that investment. If we looked back over our lives, and if we identified happiness, you know, you draw the horizontal line over the course of your life, start at birth, and you're not going to remember early things, but if you look back, you're going to find that the greatest degree of happiness that you would have experienced or I would have experienced are going to be connected to those times where we invested more energy, not only into ourselves, but into other people, into thoughts. We would have invested energy into understanding and utilizing our feelings, and then invested energy into our actions. And that really is what produced the feelings of happiness that we would have harvested from that investment. The takeaway from this point number one is this: there is no such thing as impossible. Impossible, as a concept, pertains to a person's unwillingness to invest their energy in a desired outcome. And so they instead pronounce something impossible. It's a lack of awareness, as I proved over and over to myself. The second main point I want to add is about where to go for the energy so we have energy to invest. We've all heard this cliche: it takes money to make money. That cliche has been used as an alibi and as an excuse to not invest energy. And the statement is a lie, kind of like money doesn't grow on trees is a lie. I just pulled the last 6 lemons off our lemon tree this morning. If I were a lemon farmer, those lemons would be money. In my case, they are also money. You know why? Because I won't buy the next 6 lemons from the grocery store. I just took them off the tree. It takes energy, not money, to make money. So where do we get this energy? If we read and study the truth of existence description that Jesus lays out in the book, Christ Returns, Reveals Startling Truth, we will come to understand that this source of all energy has continually provided for us. That's where the energy comes from, the source of all energy. Physically, you and I started out when the infinitesimally small spermatozoa from our father and the tiny ovum from our mother connected, and the egg became fertilized. From these two tiny ingredients, energy was provided that enabled our physical bodies to grow not only in size, but to develop in complexity too. No one really knows why the fetus develops as it does unless we recognize that there's an intelligence with a capital I directing this process. Most of us call this intelligence God, divine consciousness, Yahweh, Jehovah, Allah, supreme being, great spirit, universal intelligence, infinite intelligence, and a bunch of other names. At this point in human development, we all should have experienced and been aware of experiencing the spiritual laws that govern life. Some of these have recently become popularized as an idea, so a lot more people are aware of them, but we, for centuries, millennia, have experienced these laws, whether we understood them or not. The law of cause and effect, the law of attraction, as we sow, we reap, as a man thinketh, so he is. We get more of what we focus on, and in my words, our return on investment is balanced with our energetic investment. To understand that the energy we call life, capital L, comes from the source of all life, enables our awareness to turn to the same source when we need more energy, more courage, more spirit, a stronger will, more discipline, more healing spirit, more ideas, more nutrition and nourishment, more work, more financial support, etc. To do that is like entering what I call the superstore of all energy and potential. And it is my firm belief that that superstore, this godness, this consciousness, has been designed specifically for us. Here's the point. Investing time, energy, and thought into increasing our awareness of our relationship with our Creator is what will show up as the return of our continuing growth. That'll be the return on our investment, continuing growth, our nourishment, our healing, our protection, the perfect fulfillment of our needs, work, survival, alignment with the natural rhythms that occur on planet Earth, and our working in harmony with the spiritual law and order that is designed for our benefit. All of this works to support and satisfy us in the accomplishment of our purposes for being alive. Investing the energy that works for you, in you, and through you is the secret to happiness, health, and success. And I would say, and I hear this in so many different ways, and I recognize it true, and I think you will as well, that when we invest energy in the service to others, we discovered the key to our own happiness, and we facilitate those people discovering the key to their own happiness. Not us, but the source of all happiness. And we invest in sharing that energy, and all kinds of good things occur for us and others, and we become a brighter light. There's no shortage of energy to invest. All we have to do is ask for it, and we receive it. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized, modified version of a prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns, Reveal Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know that it is your will that we should be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. I love that prayer. It is so. Thank you. Amen.